Hi, and welcome to our first podcast episode of Email Marketing with ListTrack. I'm Brent Schroyer, and I'm the creative director and media artist at ListTrack. With me today is Ross Kramer, president and chief evangelist for ListTrack. Hi, Ross.
Hey, Brent. You ready to get this thing kicked off?
Sure am. Hey, for those listening who might not know, what is ListTrack?
Well, as you know, Brent, ListTrack is a web-based, hosted, self-service email marketing application. So what does that mean? Well, it's an application that lives on the web. Our customers log in using a user ID and password. They've got, most times have a list of email addresses of customers that they want to communicate with, say in Excel. They'll use the ListTrack interface and our import wizard to import that list into their ListTrack account. Then they use any one number of our content creation tools within ListTrack to build a nice relevant HTML email that they then deploy out to their list. The beauty of ListTrack really kicks in when we start tracking and reporting on the tracking and analytics through our GUI in terms of who's opening the message, who's reading, who's clicking through, who's bouncing, why are they bouncing. And that's really the beauty and the heart and soul of ListTrack.
Well, in this podcast, we plan on covering all things ListTrack, but we'll also be talking a lot about a lot of general email marketing news, tips, and strategies.
That's right. Here at ListTrack, we get to talk to a lot of email marketers, and we see a ton of email campaigns. And really, what we want to do is share some of the knowledge that we get to see through this podcast medium, which we think is a great thing to do.
Great. Well, today we have audio from a webinar that Ross recently posted. There's a lot of great information packed into the next 60-plus minutes. Ross, tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear.
Well, I've got a 3-hour best practices of email marketing seminar that I put on at different areas throughout the country. And essentially, what I've done is I've condensed down that content to really 70 minutes of just key and critical email marketing content that's essential for anybody that's engaged in email marketing. So we're gonna talk about best practices for list management, acquisition, and everybody's hot topic, deliverability.
Okay, well, we're going to make this intro short so that we can get right into the webinar. The slides and the webinar recorded as a whole can be found at www.listtrack.com/webinar.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ross Kramer, and I'm the president of ListTrack, and we're glad that you all have joined us this afternoon for our email marketing best practices webinar. We're a web-based email service provider, and we deliver what we call marketing intelligence, email marketing intelligence, to our customers through our intuitive web-based interface. We're a leading ASP. Again, we've got a great user interface with some great tools and technology to deliver, manage, and track your email campaigns. And we've got about 250 current clients in both the United States and Europe. ListTrack ships in 3 different flavors. We have our ASP, our application service provider, which is a web-based interface. Most of our customers log in this way. We also operate in a full-service model where this is a hands-off approach for our customers and where our professional service team is running all aspects of the campaign creative, as well as the strategy and the deployment, as well as the tracking. And we also offer our application in a private label form, whereas our graphical user interface is skinned out and the ListTrack brand is transparent and our partner's brand shows through. We've got a nice integrated WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get HTML editor that's based off of our template system, so you can deploy your graphical emails without knowing a whole lot of HTML code. Additionally, we've got a lot of really rich, data-rich reports where you can see who's opening your message, who's reading your message, who's clicking through, where are they clicking on, where are they clicking from. And we've got some really nice graphs integrated within the application, so you can export all of your data out into the graph format, or all of your data can also be exported out into Excel as well. And then finally, we've got a cool feature that we like to think that we pioneered, which is geographical targeting within email campaigns. So we can actually show our customers where a particular person has opened a message, where they've read the message, and where they've clicked through, and we plot that performance data on a map. And this is an example of a map of the United States. You can then drill down further, and you can also see different countries as well. So just a brief overview of the ListTrack application and who we are. Now we're going to be getting into the real meat and potatoes of the application and of our webinar today, and we'll put the sales pitch behind us. But mainly want to focus on three things today, three major topics, which is best practices for email marketing. We want to talk about email acquisition strategies, and I'm going to follow up with best practices for email deliverability. I personally have spent a number of years focusing my research on email deliverability, and we've got some really nice things to share about email deliverability. So we're going to jump into the meat of the topic today, which is really why should we embrace email marketing. The CMO Council in 2004 surveyed their membership, and they asked, of all of the marketing aspects, of all the different marketing functions, which ones provide the greatest ROI? And the CMO Council came back and said that by far, direct response marketing, be it postal mail or email, gives that group the highest amount of ROI. So right off the bat, we know that direct response marketing can have a positive impact on your marketing return on investment. Beyond that, the DMA, the Direct Marketing Association, surveyed their readers, and they asked, okay, of the direct response metrics, which particular space within the direct response gives you what amounts of ROI? And we see that email, in terms of the DMA's numbers, comes in at a very respectable 2.31% response rate. So dimensional mail is up there at 5.5%. Direct mail is a little bit higher at 2.73. But email is still a very respectable 2.31, which when you bump up the cost effectiveness of email, it really makes sense. And that's really where my next slide comes in, that asks the question, why email marketing? Well, I like to say that email marketing has really a trifecta effect, whereby it's cost effective, it's pervasive, and when done right, it's anticipated. The first bullet point being cost effective is really a no-brainer. It's one of the things that has really pushed this channel forward and allowed a lot of marketers to get into it. Whether you are a real high-level marketer or you're a small business, you can participate in email marketing. At the same time, it's extremely pervasive. In the days of commercial-free satellite radio and commercial-skipping TiVo devices, email is a very pervasive medium, and you can cut through the clutter and get right into the person's inbox. And when done correctly, when the permission level is managed correctly, when the content mix is correct, and when your offer and your creative have been tuned and delivered at the right time, the message can be anticipated. And that's really where all of the pieces come together, and you've got some extremely high return on your marketing investment by using email marketing. So also want to make a little illustration here as we move through sort of why email marketing and what email marketing can do for you. Two pieces of takeaways that I want to give to you today. The first is the slides that you see on the screen here are produced by a group called Alexa.com. And I'm not sure if anybody on the call goes out to Alexa.com at all, but it's a really neat resource that you can use to, it's a really nice resource that you can use to get comparative data on not only how many people are coming to your website, but how many people are coming to your competitor's website. So Alexa is a really nice tool that can give you a snapshot into how many people are coming to your competitor's websites. There's a guy out there, his name's Bill McCloskey, and he writes an article for MediaPost called The Email Insider. It's a weekly piece that he writes along with a couple other industry influencers. And right after Christmas, Bill wrote a piece about the effects that email marketing can have on driving traffic to your website, specifically as it pertains to after holiday sales. And we'll see in the first example, Old Navy sent out special on December 20th, or sent out an email on December 27th, essentially promoting just their brand. That email showed a 46% increase in web traffic. It was a general email, was sort of a generic email, didn't really talk about the sale that was going on. On the other side of that, the folks at Spiegel sent out an email campaign a few days after Christmas promoting their sale, and that sale email generated a 360% increase in traffic. So you can see how marketers are using email to effectively drive traffic to their websites, and you can see how it's important, the content that you use within your website, and how you can see a much greater increase in traffic by specifically stating the offers and the specials and the promotions that you've got going on within your site. So, quick illustration, I would recommend that everybody shoot out to MediaPost to sign up for Bill McCloskey's article, as well as check out Alexa.com for some comparative and competitive results analysis there. ListTrack looks at email marketing from a best practices perspective. We started email acquisition, we work through list management, campaign creation, deployment, deliverability, tracking, and then we work with our customers to refine and tune their offers and their creative perspectives and their acquisition strategies. We really look at it from a holistic model. And these are the main topics that I'm going to touch on today for today's webinar, starting with email acquisition. And I'll come back to email acquisition in a few slides and talk some more about that and really drill down onto how to get more leads onto your email list and how to get more prospects signed up onto your house list. But email acquisition is really about acquiring as many customers, as many leads, as many prospects as you can, making sure that you're managing that permission level correctly. You want to make sure that you're utilizing your existing website to use as an acquisition tool, and I'll tell you some more about how you can do that. We'll also talk about how you can exploit some existing opportunities within your firm and within your own organization to gather more email leads. We'll talk about leveraging some third-party data as an email acquisition tool. And then we'll also talk about how you can use email communications as a channel to remarket and to continue the conversation with those people as well. We're going to first jump into list management. I've got a couple of slides on the best practices for list management and the pieces that fall underneath that, including subscription management, removal management, as well as bounce management. So if we drill down and we have a look at subscription management, one of the things that we want to do from a best practices perspective is to make sure that you're getting a valid email address. And this is real simple to do, and it's one of the things that many marketers overlook, is that it's very easy for your web department or your webmaster or your programming team to just write a simple script to validate that you're getting a proper email address. And your tech guys will know exactly what to do, and it's a very simple, stupid thing to do, but it can help to boost your overall rates. You also may want to also write a script to filter out any types of abuse at or postmaster at addresses that competitors or other types of folks that may want to do you or your organization harm may be doing to get those types of addresses onto your list. If you're running a double opt-in campaign, which we'll talk about, you can help to keep that type of thing at a minimum, but at the edge, you may want to filter out that type of a thing. As well, you may want to consider using a list hygiene service. ListTrack has a list hygiene feature built into it that will automatically change a, for example, hot mall address into a hot mail address. We'll also turn an ALO.com bounce into an AOL.com deliverable. We also fix common ISP mergers and acquisitions and things like that. So ListTrack's got that feature built in. There's also some third parties that also offer list hygiene features as well. You may, from a subscription perspective, want to consider running a double opt-in campaign. We recommend double opt-in campaigns for a lot of our customers The net effect of running a double opt-in campaign is that your list quality will really increase, your deliverability is going to increase, and this double opt-in is really where somebody's signing up to get onto your email list, you're returning an email to them saying, are you sure you want to subscribe? And they're clicking through on a link to verify that subscription level. Overall, your spam complaints are going to be reduced, your deliverability is going to be increased, and your overall percentage metrics by running a double opt-in campaign are going to be higher. So we recommend that to anybody that's serious about email marketing. One of the things that I also like to recommend to the people that I'm talking to with regards to their subscription model is to measure their subscription ROI. And I recommend monitoring your new email acquisitions, just like you measure hits onto your website. I'm sure a lot of the folks on the call today are watching their hits, watching how many people are coming from Google, how many people are coming to website from Yahoo onto their website. Not enough people are measuring their subscription ROI and understanding where their raw number of acquisitions are coming from. Beyond that, many people aren't doing a good enough job of tracking the acquisition source and then understanding how each of those sources affect their return on investment. So I definitely recommend that for everybody. And beyond that, I recommend reporting on your subscription method visually. And I know that everybody on this call today is a very busy person, and they've got a lot of different things that they're responsible for. Being able to report on something visually in a dashboard style reporting can really help to spot inconsistencies within your data and help you be a more effective and agile marketer. We also recommend to everybody to use a welcome message. This is probably one of the most underused tools in an email marketer's toolbox. And research shows that your welcome message will have one of the highest open rates of any of the messages that you'll deploy to any of your recipients. And it really stands to reason, because you've got a person, they're out at your website, they're engaged, they're interested in the products and services that you have to offer. However, the person signs up, and if you're not keeping the conversation going, it might be a week, a month, a few months until you're communicating with them next, and you could really lose a chance to keep them engaged. So we definitely recommend using a welcome message. You want to experiment with the positioning, with the offer, with the creative of that welcome message. You want to make sure that you're giving them the opportunity to opt out of your email communications in that welcome message, just in case they got signed up erroneously. You also want to give them, if you're running some type of a preference center, you want to give them the ability to click through and set and tune any type of preferences that you may have. And you also want to make sure that you're giving them ample information of how to contact your company otherwise. We're finding people are using the welcome message as sort of an information tool to find out phone numbers, contact information, things like that. So make sure your welcome message does more than just welcome the person onto your list, but actually offers some actual value as well. As we continue through our list management section, we also want to talk about removal management. Removal management is important these days, especially due to the Canned Spam Act that says you must be honoring all of your opt-outs. So removal management is an important piece of the overall pie. I like to say that you want to understand where your removes are coming from. You want to understand, are they coming from the unsubscribe link? Are your removals coming because some type of a bounce threshold is reached? Where are your removals coming in from ISP complaints? And can those ISP complaints be tracked back to a permission problem or something like that? So I recommend keeping an eye on where your removals are coming from, and then also, again, just like your subscribers, have a visual report and a visual graph to report on where your removals are coming from. And here's an example where you can see in May, a lot of removals came from bounces. You can quickly spot that and say, hey, whoa, what's going on here? This is an anomaly. What's happening? Why are my bounces higher than May? Why am I removing all these people due to bounces? Are they actual invalid addresses, or did I have a deliverability problem? So having a visual report will allow you to very quickly spot any types of inconsistencies. We also recommend running a churn report. Industry average says that about 20 to 30% of your list is going to turn each year. This means it's important that you're going to be adding more than 20 to 30% of new addresses onto your list. A visual churn report helps you understand is your subscription model positive or negative, and you can quickly see that and understand where you're going to be positioned. Beyond that, and the last piece of our list management section is bounce management. Bounce management is a biggie these days, mainly due to the fact that not all bounces are true bounces. Anytime we're talking about mass mailing and doing any types of outbound broadcast mailing, a portion of your mail is going to bounce back due to false positives of content filters or spam blocks or blacklists or things like that. So you want to understand where your bounces are coming from and understand which are true bounces and which are bounces coming from deliverability problems. Again, 20 to 35% of your list is going to turn each year. You may want to look at partnering with a company such as ListTrack to help you with ECOA, which is email change of address, to help add back some of those invalid addresses and make them valid again. You also may want to implement in your program some type of a hard bounce grace period. I know in ListTrack, we allow you to set a grace period so that when you're mailing to someone and that person bounces for X number of times, you can automatically remove that person so you're not paying to continue to deliver to an invalid address. We've got a feature called a soft bounce grace period as well, where we're resending to soft bounces for up to 14 days. And we know that a soft bounce is a user over quota, mailbox full, some situation like that where it's not that we can't deliver to them tomorrow, it's just that we can't deliver to them today. And ListTrack will continue to resend soft bounces for up to 14 days. So that's a little bit about bounce management. Again, if you're utilizing a bounce count threshold, you want to be analyzing the type of bounce. You want to be sure that you're not removing any type of false positives. And you may want to implement something like what ListTrack does with our current bounce count feature, whereby you reset a person's existing bounce count if the person opens a message, reads a message, or clicks through on a message. So if you sense that person is alive, so to speak, that you reset their bounce count. And that can be helpful to people that mail often, including publishers. So you may also want to make sure that you're using a tool that you can actually see the actual bounce reason, or the reason why a message has bounced. ListTrack now gives you that ability to drill down on your bounces and actually see specifically what the bounce reason was. And we have some more information about bounce management in our deliverability section, but this is a screen that a lot of folks can use to understand exactly what's going on with their bounces. So now we're going to transition to campaign creative. A lot of folks, when we put on these types of events, are interested in knowing what pieces of campaign creative, what pieces of the email campaign can they use to have their campaigns work effectively and work really hard for them. And really, your job as an email marketer is to create email campaigns that work hard and deliver the highest ROI. Speaking to that level, you want to make sure that your campaign content is not only anticipated, but it's also relevant. And that's where the permission piece comes in. You want to be personalizing your content to your user's preference. You want to be creating subject lines that are well-formed, that inspire people to open the message. The DMA surveyed their group, and I think we've got a slide here that speaks to this, but they surveyed their group and asked, what is the major metric that you're looking at to test and tune your campaigns? And by and large, the DMA's membership came back and said that they're using subject line testing as the best way to improve response. Beyond that, you want to make sure that your body copy is compelling a reader to click through. And that's really what it's about, is creating relevant content for people to click through. So as we go through, here's that slide that I talked about with the DMAs surveyed their readership to understand what metrics are you using, what techniques are you using to increase campaign response. Subject line testing was up at the top, followed by personalization, segmentation, both demographic and geographic, as well as email change of address came in as in the last place. We've got here at ListTrack what we call 4 campaign deployment imperatives. And what we did was we looked at thousands of campaigns to understand similar characteristics within those campaigns. And we tried to peg those characteristics on what characteristics created the highest returning email campaigns. And we boiled it down into 4 different characteristics. The first one that we found was personalization. And this is our first imperative here with personalization is usually the one that creates the most amount of heated reaction to different people. But we found that campaigns that included the person's first name in the subject line performed higher and got higher open rates than campaigns that did not. Some folks think that this is a spammy tactic. Some folks don't. I'm just reporting on what the numbers told us, by adding a person's name in the subject line got a higher response rate than those that did not. We also found that by including your company name, that you would also increase your response rates as well. And this really comes in for AOL users, and we've got some slides towards the end of the presentation where we talk about optimizing your email delivery and deliverability and performance out at AOL, and I'll show you why that's really important. We also like to see people including an offer in the subject line. We like to say if you've got an offer, definitely state it in the subject line. And if you don't have an offer, we recommend that you perhaps come up with one and pop it in there. This will help to boost your open rates. And we also recommend that you include a time limit or expiration within your subject line. And we think that a great subject line would be, for example, Roland, 2 days left to save 20% or more on Dell laptops. And we've found in studies that the closer that your time limit is, the better that your response will be. So for example, a subject line that had last chance in it, we found will perform better than 4 days left. So here's an example, if we carry on with the 4 deployment imperatives, here's an example of a company that's doing it well. This is a vineyard out in California called eMonitor, or actually called Freemark Abbey. Their communication is called eMonitor. And you can see up in the subject line, they're stating, Margaret, only a few days left to save 25% on Cabernet Bosch. This is a great subject line, and it's performed well consistently for this group. Additionally, you can see that they're restating the subject line, restating the offer in above the fold within their campaign. And they're also personalizing the message and including an above-the-fold link within their campaign as well. A lot of people say to me, Ross, how do I get really maximize my click-throughs? I like to say put as many of your links at the top of your message and above the fold as possible. We found that many people don't scroll, and that since email is such an impulse type of a medium, that by putting your links and your most important content above the fold can really help out. So just a couple of peaks in here in terms of improving your response. One of the things that we also love about email is that you can test so easily. And the fact that email is so cost effective, you can very easily test your campaigns. And if you think any of those 4 imperatives will work or possibly won't work, the great thing is that you can use your email as a tool to test. One of the things that we love to see is somebody doing subject line testing or A/B splits. where, for example, if your mailing day is on Wednesday, you can set aside some time Tuesday morning and send a small campaign out to an A group and a B group to test your subject lines. You're going to immediately get your response back in a number of hours, and on the day that you're going to mail, you'll be able to go with the subject line that performed best for you. So definitely recommend any type of testing in an A-B split type of a format. So we're now going to segue a little bit and going to give you some information on some things that some folks from Marketing Sherpa are doing with regards to heat map studies. And if anybody reads Marketing Sherpa, that's fabulous. If you are an avid reader of Marketing Sherpa, you'll find that a lot of the content within this PowerPoint comes from the folks at Marketing Sherpa. If you've never heard of Marketing Sherpa before, I strongly recommend that you shoot out there to marketingsherpa.com. A gal by the name of Ann Holland is the editor there and the publisher, and she just does a fabulous job of presenting some really great actionable content for marketers. And she's got a real wealth of information. You can search through her library of documents, and you can purchase old archive documents for just a couple of dollars. So it's a great resource. One of the things that the folks at Marketing Sherpa have been doing a lot have been heat map studies and eye tracking studies, where they've got this contraption that hooks up to people's eyeballs, and it tracks where their eyes are going on the screen when they're presented with an email campaign or a landing page or things like that. So I wanted to share some of their findings with you. They did a study where they wanted to know what works better, an image and a call to action or an ad on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, and they really didn't know. So they did an eye tracking study to understand this, and what they came up with was that the creative, when placed on the left-hand side, had a much higher impact on their email campaigns than if the creative was placed on the right-hand side. They found when the ad was placed on the left-hand side, their viewing time increased overall. They also found that they had a higher amount of clicks happening when an image or ad was placed on the left-hand side. So just a neat takeaway here. And by the way, all of this stuff is found in their annual study of metrics. You can find that listed out on their website currently. The Marketing Sherpa folks also wanted to see what the effect of using images were. And they weren't sure of what the effect would be if they were to use images. So they did a sort of A-B split between an email campaign that was just a multi-column article or a single article and an article that included a image. And the results that they came back with were quite compelling. They found that when including an image in their emails, the average viewing time increased from 18 seconds to 37 seconds. So quite a measurable increase there. They've also found that their clicks more than doubled. So they had more than double the amount of clicks on a campaign that actually included an image. So this was a really neat discovery that I found, and I think it stands to help a lot of email marketers out there understand, am I using too many images? Should I be using images at all? What's my effect of images? And I think you can see here with this study that using an image can be a positive, can generate positive experiences for you. So some neat takeaways on that as well. Another question that we get a lot with these types of events that we put on is, when should I send my email? When should I deploy my email campaigns? And this is probably one of the most important decisions that you're going to make as an email marketer. And I've got a couple of slides to back this up. But I like to say mail whenever the inbox is clean. And generally, that is weekdays during Monday through Friday time. Here on this slide, I've got 9 a.m., but before noon, I think you'd be okay even into, say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But generally, this is the time when the inbox is most clean, when people have it cleaned out and rid of spam and other stuff that's not really wanted or warranted within a person's inbox. You may want to consider geographical segmentation or consider time zones. I would recommend staying away from Friday afternoons and weekends. Generally, you want to catch people when they're most engaged. I think a lot of people spend a good deal of time away from their inboxes on weekends, and your chances of having your campaign reach an inbox between two pieces of spam is a lot higher on weekends, and you really don't want your campaign to be deleted between two if it's wedged between two pieces of spam. Additionally, we recommend to maintain consistency if you mail regularly. So if you're a publisher who mails regularly, we recommend mail on the same day at the same time, and that can help to boost your response rates. We've got some data here to support when you should mail as well. This is a slide produced by the EROI guys, and it shows the total amount of mail sent, and then we plot the performance data in terms of opens and clicks. And what we find is that, and as many of you on this call know, Tuesdays and Thursdays have been said to be the most, the best days to mail. And I'm not quite sure who came out with that first, but somebody a number of years ago came out and said, Tuesdays and Thursdays are the best days to mail. Well, we can see on the red line that the amount of mail sent on the internet is much higher on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So what does that mean to you as an email marketer? Well, it means you've got more competition for eyeballs and attention on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We can also see by looking at the yellow and the green bars that Tuesdays and Thursdays have some of the lowest click-through and open rates. Conversely, we can see on Mondays, we've got some of the lowest volumes of mail being sent, but some of the highest open and click-through rates. So again, I recommend test. Definitely test your campaigns. Test on Mondays. Test on Fridays. If you think I'm full of bull, test on Sundays. Test on a weekend. That's the great thing about email is you can do these tests. The one thing that you can't, that doesn't hide from this graph is the fact that you've got a lot of competition on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So if you are mailing on those days, I would recommend to test on a different day. Beyond that time, or beyond that that perspective, we just did a study where we're looking at the shelf life of an email campaign. One of the things that I was interested in knowing was how often does a campaign stay relevant? And you can see on this particular slide that over 70%, and this is we looked at about 2,000 email campaigns sent in 2005 out to about 17 million unique recipients. We had a lot of data that we looked at. And what we found was over 70% of the clicks happened in the first day that the email campaign was sent. On day two, the clicks dropped off to 8%, then 5%, 4%, 3%, 2%. And then what we did find was after 1 week or 1 week after the campaign was sent, the campaigns did see up to an 8% plus click-through rate. So a couple of takeaways from this is that the first thing is the day that you mail is a very important choice that you're going to make. So with 70% of the clicks coming the day that you actually deploy your campaign, that's a big decision that you're going to make. And also another takeaway is that you can see up to 8% and possibly higher click-through rate 1 week after you deploy your campaign. So that means that the links and the content within your campaign can continue to stay relevant even for a long time after you deploy your campaign. So just some neat data points to use here. Beyond that, what you want to be doing is looking to test and tune further. You want to be acting on your campaign results. With each campaign that you send, the recipients that are receiving those campaigns are going to be telling you something. Understand what they're telling you. Who opened? Who read? Who clicked? Who took action? Where did they go? How can you use that data to develop further, more relevant campaigns as you go through? Can you dynamically profile your recipients based upon the information and the actions that they take? You're going to be asking yourself this, and you want to continually be searching for consistent, relevant content and offers and promotions that you can deploy to people based upon this tracking data that you're collecting. So in terms of testing and tuning, these are the questions that you want to be asking yourself. So we're going to take a little departure from campaign creation. We're going to jump over to different acquisition strategies with respect to lead generation. And here for the next couple slides, I want to review some of the best methods for acquiring new leads and prospects. And then we're also going to talk about getting your email, finish up with how to best ways to get your email delivered. First thing is you want to use your website as an acquisition tool, and I've got a slide that that speaks to this. You want to be modifying your existing processes. That means if you're a retailer, you want to be modifying your checkout processes to include email acquisition. If you're a cataloger, you want to be training your CSRs to be getting the permission levels from your different customers and the people that are calling in to communicate via email. And you also want to be exploiting different viral opportunities, different forward to a friend opportunities and things like that. So we give you some examples of these. Again, we've got another slide that talks about some of the most effective lead generation methods. This is the Marketing Sherpa folks did a study, and they found that person's website can be one of the best ways to generate leads. Seminars, webinars, such as the ones that we're doing here, can be effective. And the list goes on from there, but you can see the effective methods on this slide. When we're talking about using your website effectively, the first thing you want to make sure you're doing is you want to make sure that you're making it available on your website. You want to make sure that you're making it easy to sign up. We recommend embedding your sign-up form into the navigation of your site so that it's on every page and it's got a lot of exposure on your site. You may want to consider using a two-stage sign-up process. What we mean by a two-stage sign-up process is that you're asking for the email address on the first stage. So maybe it's just a box with email address. They sign up, they hit submit. You're committing that email address to the database, and then you're taking them to a second page where you're asking them for some more pertinent demographic, psychographic, geographic information to get some more data on them. As we know, people don't like to fill out long forms, so we really recommend keeping your forms as short as possible. I know when I came back and sort of looked at some of the processes that we were doing at ListTrack, I know in one of our forms, we were using the form field of fax number. And that was, to me, that was just ludicrous that we were asking for somebody's fax number. We didn't need their fax number. We don't need their fax number in just an engagement type of a form. So we were real quick to pull out form fields that we didn't need and just focus on the minimum amount of form fields that we need, mainly because people do not like to fill out long forms. We've also found that by reassuring them that their data is safe with you, that you're going to have a noticeable lift. So you may want to modify your existing forms to say, your data is safe with us, we're not going to share your data, et cetera, et cetera. And beyond that, you may want to tell them why you need their email, such as we're going to send a confirmation email, we're going to follow up with XYZ after the event, et cetera, et cetera. So a couple of practical examples of using your website. When we talk to some folks in these types of formats, a lot of people ask us about list rental. They say, hey, Ross, I don't have a list. Should I rent a list? And really the thing that we lead with is that list rental is a real slippery slope these days. It can provide positive results for some, but you definitely want to be cognizant. And we like to say, it's really buyer beware when renting a list. You want to be asking the broker, how was the list collected? Can you do a recency select? We know from historic research data that the people that have signed up most recently on a list are going to be the ones that are going to respond the best. So can you just pull those people from using a recency select? When was the last clean? What's the site's usage? Do you mail every day, every week, two times a day? What's the story with the list's usage? I believe we've got a slide here, which we do, that talks about what you can expect from list rental performance. And we're really seeing somewhere around a 0 to 1% click-through rate from list rental. So if you've got an idea that you want to do list rental, you're going to be looking at a less than 2% click-through rate for list rental. We have done with success newsletter advertising for our own internal promotions. And if you don't have a list and you're looking to build your list or supplement the list that you do have, we found that advertising and email newsletters can provide positive return on investment. What we found is that a lot of the folks that run email newsletters, these would be publishers and things like that in different vertical industries, will sometimes will sell space on just a flat rate versus a cost per thousand. We found that the delivery in email newsletters is much higher than renting a list. And we found that your brand won't be seen as a potential spammer by just advertising in a newsletter versus renting a list. So you have a little bit of brand protection there as well by looking at email newsletter ads. We also like to recommend to some people to take a multi-channel approach to their email marketing and also to their acquisition strategy. HP did a cool thing where they got a 31% conversion rate by running a postcard campaign that had an online web component to it as well in order to get new leads. And here's an example of that postcard campaign where they send a personalized variable data postcard to people that have previously bought their products. And what they were trying to do was drive people to a landing page to have them sign up for a training event. So they send out this personal postcard, which also, this was kind of cool, if you see down at the bottom of the slide, it included a personal click-through URL as well. So you can see that they were pushing people out to hpitclasses.com/Sarah.Callahan. So they had kind of a sexy URL that sort of invited people to go out to that site. And then once they actually went to that site, they were greeted with this landing page that, again, welcomed Sarah personally. It said, "Welcome, Sarah. Sign up for our classes, et cetera, et cetera." So this is a good example of using data that you can buy, being postal data, running a variable data postcard campaign to personalize the campaign, and then driving them to landing pages and converting them as customers there. So that's a neat example as well. The next thing we want to talk about is modifying existing business processes to acquire more email addresses. And this is really about exploiting the processes that already exist within your organization. So you want to be, again, empowering call center reps. You want to be rewarding your sales staff for getting permission. If you've got any types of bricks and mortar, using a Dropbox and retail locations for email address sign up. We've seen this be implemented very well with respect to loyalty programs and things like that. And you may want to employ external sources for customer acquisition, such as affiliates and things like that. We've seen kiosks be effective as well as a point of purchase for different live events and things like that. Here's an example of what the Bronx Zoo is doing with a kiosk. They're actually asking for people's email addresses in this kiosk, and then they're using email as a communications channel to keep in contact with these folks. And lastly, you want to be exploiting viral opportunities. These are the forward to a friend. This is word of mouth marketing. People will pass your message along, especially if you're in a specific vertical market or you've got a brand that people feel very passionately about. Email marketing allows you to measure the effectiveness of these messages. It can work well. I know a couple months ago we were meeting with a group of golfers, which is a lot of people are passionate about the sport of golf, and we found that a lot of people will forward different offers and different opportunities along to other people that feel as passionately about the product, service, or brand. And we recommend including a viral component into every one of your outbound email campaigns. A lot of people will say to us, though, Ross, you know, we don't feel that viral marketing has really delivered on the promise. Well, so maybe a lot of that has to do with the fact that everybody just puts their forward to a friend feature down at the bottom of every one of their campaigns. We've found some of the best campaigns, the best viral campaigns, to be campaigns that are specifically targeted to do just that, to have somebody forward to a friend. The example that we've got up on our WebEx right now is a fairly old example, but it has been one of the best performing viral campaigns. And this is actually from back in 2002, the gubernatorial election down in Florida. The Republican campaign sent out this email campaign to Republicans in Florida. It was essentially a get out the vote. It was sent the day before Election Day, and it said, "Tomorrow's Election Day. We ask that you please contact 5 other Floridians via email, phone, or in person and remind them to vote." And you clicked through on this. You went to a landing page that had a spot where you popped in 5 of your friends' email addresses and hit submit, and then those 5 people got this email, and it really went around, and they had a really tremendous experience and response rate from this particular campaign. So when done well, your forward to a friend and your viral campaigns can work very effectively. So now we're going to take a breath and segment over to the last area of what we're going to be talking about today, which is email deliverability. When we talk about deliverability, we're really talking about the ability to get a message delivered into a recipient's inbox. That's how we're measuring and defining deliverability. Why should you care about email deliverability? Well, industry average is saying that about 20% of all of your commercial messages are being filtered each year. And that's up from 15% in 2004. We saw about 20% in 2005, and we feel in 2006 that number is going to continue. The reason for this is really due to the worldwide growth in spam, and you can see some numbers reported here on this slide, is that the volume of spam will continue to grow into the years to come. As the spammers and the virus writers really become more meshed in together, and as a lot of the spam that you see today is out there really looking to defraud people and to inject spyware and adware and steal people's credit card information and things like that, as it becomes more lucrative for the bad guys to do this sort of thing, the growth in spam is going to increase. So what marketers really need is a trusted source to get their messages delivered. And this is really due to that the number one consumer complaint on the internet is unsolicited commercial email. And it stands to reason that one of the main concerns for direct email marketers is deliverability. So we're going to step through, give you guys some practical recommendations for getting your messages through and getting your emails delivered. We found that there's 3 main factors that can affect your deliverability. When we boil it down, there's really 3 factors. We found that the number one factor that affects deliverability is user complaints. And this is especially relevant when we talk about B2C marketing. User complaints are really driving deliverability factors for any types of B2C, business-to-consumer marketers. Beyond that, we found that bad HTML code or words used within your campaigns can sometimes lead to getting your campaigns blocked. And the third thing that we found is misconfigured mail servers can lead to poor deliverability performance. So if we jump into some things, what we're going to look at first is user complaints. We found this is really the number one reason for deliverability issues, and when we really open up the hood and look inside a lot of deliverability problems, we found that a lot of times the issues stem from permission problems. Either the permission wasn't there in the first place or it wasn't communicated well. We've also found that deliverability problems leading from user complaints have been spurred due to overmailing or frequency issues. We've also found different user complaints coming from the fact that the removal facility was either hard to find or non-existent. So this is some of the things that we're coming up with that we're finding right now. We found that at the top ISPs, such as AOL, Yahoo, MSN, user complaints are going to be one of the number one reasons why your mail's not being delivered. So, and we'll give you some practical tips on how to get that in check. But beyond that, we found that the following things can lead to some deliverability issues as well. HTML forms are generally not suggested for email marketing. You can find in some ISPs, particularly out at Yahoo, the use of HTML forms can get your email campaign diverted into the junk mailbox. We also recommend staying away from any types of scripting languages, including JavaScript and VBScript. Some of the scripting languages can get you a first-class ticket into the junk mail folder as well. We also recommend staying away from CSS or cascading style sheets. What we found is that not all ISPs are implementing CSS the same way. So what may look good in the MSN inbox might look bad in the Yahoo inbox or even in an Outlook inbox. So we recommend staying away from CSS altogether. In fact, we recommend keeping your code simple. Have your designers think Netscape 3.0. Simple table structure, non-CSS is definitely recommended. We also recommend keeping your copy shorter. I was just reading one of the Marketing Sherpa newsletters that came out, and the headline there was that shorter email is definitely better. Not only from a performance standpoint, but also when you think about it, the more copy you're lumping onto your email campaigns, the more data and the more data points that spam filter has to potentially misdirect your email communication into the junk mailbox. So shorter copy is definitely better, and we surely ask to have you avoid attachments. With all of the different virus problems and issues that we've got on with the inbox due to security, we definitely recommend you staying away from attachments. The next piece we're going to look at is the problem with misconfigured mail servers. And this is really where a company like ListTrack can really help companies increase their deliverability. We've spent many, many years not only tuning our software, but also working with hardware and software vendors that are helping us get the most amount of mail delivered, and working with the ISPs to understand what volumes of email and what rates of email they want to receive in particular time frames. So a couple of things to keep in mind here, and we see this often for people running campaigns in-house, is that they don't have their reverse DNS set up correctly, which is a surefire way to get your mail discarded out at AOL. A lot of ISPs have different concurrent connection caps where they're only going to accept X amount of mail in a certain amount of time frame. And you also want to ensure that your authentication records are configured correctly. The scope of this call is really not to talk about different authentication, email authentication technologies. However, we have seen some issues where authentication records were not correctly set up, and that did lead to negative deliverability situation. A couple of the deliverability tips that we've got can be broken into two different strategies. The first is a marketing strategy. The second is a technical strategy, and we'll uncover both of these. When we first look at marketing strategies, we want to make sure that you're being clear on how you're going to be using their email address at the time of acquisition. And this can really help you keep your user complaints low. We've seen a lot of user complaints coming from the fact that people didn't know when they were signing up that they were going to receive A, this much email, B, this type of email, you know, or C, email from all of these different sources. So you want to be sure you're being clear on how you're going to use their email at the time of acquisition. Give them options on frequency and types of mailings. For example, we're recommending setting up a preference center where people can click through to change their preference, saying, I only want to receive emails from you once a week, once a month, once a quarter. I only want to receive emails with this type of a topic. It's also recommended that you ask the people to add your email address to their personal whitelist or safe senders list. The first company that we saw doing this was actually Borders. And you can see up at the top of this, top of the email campaign, that they're saying, can't see any images, email not being delivered to your inbox, add borders to your address book or safe senders list. Now, the one caveat to this is if Borders ever changes their email address, that's going to totally negate any types of safe sender or whitelist addition that they've made. So this is definitely a marketing decision, a decision that you've got to make and really stick with it. But it can lead to some positive results. We'll segue over to some technical deliverability tips that we've got for anybody doing any types of email marketing. The first of which, and really the overall premise for a lot of our technical deliverability tips, is that if you're using an ASP such as ListTrack, you want to make sure that you are compartmentalizing yourself, or that you're keeping your mailing practices and your mailing space separate from anybody else that's using an ASP. So one of the first things to do is make sure that you're using a dedicated IP address. A lot of different benefits for using a dedicated IP address. The major one is that complaints generated from other customers on an ASP do not filter down to lead to deliverability problems for you. We also recommend registering a domain name for all of your outbound email marketing activities. What we're seeing in the future is a change and a real shift towards reputation databases. A lot of these reputation databases are going to be pegged on a particular domain name, and your domain name is going to carry and collect a reputation. It's going to be positive for you to register a mailing domain and use that domain for your mailings. So that's going to be a positive aspect for you. We also are seeing that issues out at, say, AOL, if you're mailing using your corporate domain name, if an AOL user clicks block this sender, you could potentially be getting your customer service rep emails, your confirmation emails, and things like that blocked because they blocked your email campaigns from a marketing perspective. So by registering a unique domain name to use for your emailing practices is recommended. We're going to look at a couple of common mistakes of email marketers as well. The first common mistake that we see from a lot of emailers, and here's where I sort of turn the table on the folks at Marketing Sherpa and point out something that they're not doing quite so good. But we definitely recommend not using the default click-through links from your email service provider. An example of this is the folks at Marketing Sherpa send some great content each week in their weekly newsletter. One of the things that they're doing that's not so great is that they are using the default click-through rates or click-through links of their email service provider. And I sort of give you an example here where they are using a link that says cl.exct.net. Now, for example, if anybody has that, or if anybody has that particular click-through link listed in their block list, all of Marketing Sherpa's campaigns could get blocked from either that particular person or that particular ISP. And that's where defining your own mailing domain and using that domain for all of your links can come in handy. So here you can see that the link should, in my perspective, look like something like sherpaemail.com and then a unique string after that. So that's the first common mistake that we see that can get permission marketers erroneously flagged into the junk mail filter or blocked as spam. Second common mistake is that we see marketers not testing their campaigns using a spam scoring product like the one that we've got, which we call Spam Score. You can actually get back practical feedback on how to get your mail delivered. So this is an example here what Spam Score is coming back and telling people to do. So definitely recommend doing that sort of thing. Other common mistakes that we've seen is not analyzing what your bounces are really telling you. We found that some ISPs or corporate mail servers will not necessarily return a bounce back, but most will. So within your bounces, you want to be looking for different keywords, such as words like blocked, rejected, refused. You also want to be looking for keywords like too many, such as too many complaints, too many bounces. And you want to be looking for different keywords like abuse or blacklist within your bounces as well. And that can really help to spot deliverability problems. So we recommend, we see some common mistakes of people not using seedless deliverability testing. We absolutely recommend if you're doing any type of B2C mailing, get an AOL account. Make sure that AOL account is seeded in your existing mailing so you can make sure that you're not only testing out to that AOL account, but you're making sure that your email campaigns are showing up at AOL. It's easy to get at Yahoo and Hotmail accounts. We recommend seeding those accounts into your distribution list as well. On the B2B side, the biggest demographic that you're going to be seeing there is Outlook users, specifically Outlook 2003. You're going to be seeing a lot of users that are using Exchange Server as well. So you want to be cognizant of Outlook's junk mail filter ability, and you want to be testing email campaigns into Outlook 2003. You want to make sure that you're also using reporting tools that are presenting a good picture of what's happening with your deliverability. So, for example, you want to make sure you get a reporting tool that's showing you bounces by campaign. How many bounces are each of your campaigns receiving? Understand what your average bounce percentage is within that campaign, and making sure you're spotting any inconsistencies. You also want to make sure that you're reporting on the top bounce diagnostic code by campaign, which will help you spot problems with, say, corporate mail servers. And we also recommend for everybody to implement some type of an ISP deliverability report. And this is where you're reporting on your campaign performance by ISP. ListTrack's got a cool report in it where we're actually showing by ISP what your campaign performance is looking like. So here you can see, for example, the AOL ISP got a very low delivery rate, whereas the rest of the ISPs on this report got a high delivery rate. So you can quickly spot any types of inconsistencies. And this report is probably the best report that we found to quickly and easily spot deliverability problems. So we definitely recommend anybody looking into that to spot different problems. I promised everybody we'd have a look at the AOL inbox, and want to show you an example of what that looks like, and a couple of best practices. We're actually going to finish up here in the next minute or two with some practical recommendations for getting your mail delivered to AOL. But this is the latest edition version of AOL's inbox. When you hear the guys say you've got mail, this is what your recipients are looking at. Two major takeaways from the AOL inbox. The first one is that the AOL inbox is only showing the email address. They're not showing the from address. So this means that you really have to craft your from address in a well-formed fashion so that the people can see who the campaign is coming from. And if you recall from one of my four campaign deployment imperatives, I recommended that you include your company name in the subject line of your emails. And that's because AOL doesn't include the from name by default in their inbox. So by putting your company name in the subject line, you can help to have your AOL recipients identify who you are. And really, where that comes into play is for the report spam button. The report spam button has really sent the, and this is nothing new, it's been out for a number of years now, but the report spam button has really changed the rules out at AOL with respect to deliverability. You can see that the report spam button is closer to the center of the screen, and it's also bigger than the delete button. And as well, you don't actually have to even open up a message, as you can see, to report spam. You can select multiple messages and click that spam report. So it's definitely, this report spam button has definitely hurt some of the deliverability for email marketers out at AOL. And I've got a couple of practical suggestions for how to improve your results out there. Number one, as I stated, the report spam button is changing the rules out at AOL. The data that we're seeing, and you're going to hear conflicting reports out as you talk to different people, but the data that we're seeing is that one complaint out of 1,000 messages sent will start the wheels in motion out at AOL to get your campaign, your server, your IP blocked out there. We've seen that blocks can last up to 12 hours, and in worst-case scenarios, and this is absolutely worst-case scenarios, all traffic may be blocked to your site from AOL. ListTrack has a feature built in called the AOL feedback loop, where anybody that's clicking report spam, we're actually receiving that spam report, and we can automatically remove that person from your list, which is going to help to increase your deliverability out to AOL. So, as we look to wrap up here, I've got six ways to ensure that your email gets delivered out to AOL. My first one is, number one, keep your complaints lower than 1 in 1,000. You want to keep an eye on your feedback loop from AOL and your abuse reporting through service such as ListTrack to make sure that your complaints are lower than 1 in 1,000. You want to make sure that you're deploying your campaigns from a dedicated IP address, because you don't want any complaints from anybody else's IP address affecting yours as well. Additionally, you want to make sure that you're sending campaigns from your own mailing domain. One of the things that AOL is doing is when they're receiving emails, they're scanning through the emails looking for links within that campaign, and if they find a link in your campaign that has generated sufficient amount of complaints through different campaigns, that can also go into the criteria for getting your email blocked. So mailing using your own domain name is big, and not using your ISP or your ESP's default click-through links is very important. You want to, again, make sure that you're on AOL's feedback loop so you're receiving the complaints, and you want to make sure that you're removing those AOL complainers as soon as possible. I've got listed at number six that you request that your IPs be whitelisted at AOL. We've found that even by being on the AOL whitelist, if your complaint rates are high, they'll still block your campaign. So we found that the whitelisting of AOL has not been a very significant tool to get your mail delivered, especially if you've got high complaint rates. And again, the topic of this subject, of this call really isn't, really won't be germane to AOL's enhanced whitelist. Some of our support folks might be able to give you some more background on the good mail situation and what's going on with AOL's enhanced whitelist. But those are six ways to ensure that your mail gets delivered at AOL, and by doing those things, you're going to see high deliverability not only at AOL but also the top ISPs as well.
Well, I think that was plenty of great information to jam into our first podcast.
You bet. That was an email marketing sprint to the finish.
Definitely. Well, we'll present the Q&A portion of the webinar in our next episode. We'd also love to answer any questions you might have. Email us at podcast@listtrack.com, that's L-I-S-T-R-A-K, with any comments, questions, or even topics you might like to hear us talk about on the show. Also, check out listtrack.com to learn more about the ListTrack product or to schedule a tour with an email marketing expert.
Hey, and that's it for me. Stay tuned to our website for our next episode.
And thanks for joining us on our first podcast of Email Marketing with ListTrack. I'm Brent Schroyer, and we'll talk to you next time.